spirit-led and eloquent, especially on stage. What do you do if you blank out?
Great. I'll start on that one. Well, I think the thing to be careful, and I know that this question was authentic, so don't take it this way, but Jesus' warning on the Sermon on the Mount, where he says, don't be like the Pharisees that go in front of men, they speak with great eloquence and wonder, but their hearts are far from me. But when you pray to me, go to the secret place, and your Father who's waiting for you there will hear you, and he'll reward you openly. And so I'm going to break that down really quickly. I'm going to try not to do a whole sermon, but the first thing that they're saying is people would look at the Pharisees and go, wow, look how deep their theology is. Look at how demonstrative they are. Look how eloquent their words are. They're, you know, I wish I could pray like them, and I'm not going to pray because I can't pray like them. And Jesus actually says, no, actually, I reject those prayers. Don't be like them. And he says, go into the secret place. And there's just a phrase in there that's so tender to me. It says, your Father who's waiting for you in secret. I mean, it's the idea of, you know, if you have a meeting, the person who shows up first is typically the one who wants to be there more. And the idea is when you go into the secret place, you don't have to work up an enchantment. But the Father is already there, and he's already waiting for you, and he wants to hear you. And then, but the back half of what Jesus says, he doesn't say just go to the secret place and then don't ever go in public. He says, you know, go to the secret place and your Father will reward you openly. And he talks about that with all how you serve when you give. He's saying the same things. You do it in private or secret. Or what he's saying is he's not saying you can't ever do it openly. Like, it doesn't mean like if you give a gift and someone finds out it's you, like you lose your reward, you know, like. I used to think that, like, with fasting, like, if someone else found out I was fasting, it was like, no, I don't get my reward anymore. It's totally.
That's like how you get out of fasting, right? It's like someone discovers, all done with my fast now.
But what Jesus is saying is it's a matter of the heart. And if you give yourself to it in the secret place, the Father will reward you openly. And that reward openly is really just the reward of his presence and his favor. Or that reward is when you pray openly, if you've been praying in the secret place, the presence of God that is there waiting for you in the secret place will fill the public place. What the question is really saying is, you know, how I feel comfortable praying in private, but I get nervous in front of others. And I think that's a great question to ask. And I think part of the way that you need to overcome it really is thinking about, well, what is my motivator? What am I trying to do? And if you are trying to impress people, then you will get nervous. And nerves really come from, if you care about what other people think about you, you're nervous about something. If you honestly don't, then the nerves go away. If you really only care about what your Father in heaven thinks, you're not going to be nervous about if you stumble over your words, because your Father is the one who still hears you. And so going in and saying, you know, I don't care if I impress anybody, but I'm just going to be authentic. I'm going to be real. And God, what are you saying to me? And just saying that as simply and honestly and vulnerably as you can. I think a good place to practice is just, you know, in groups and with friends. I mean, maybe it's difficult for you on stage when you're leading worship, but start praying with people out loud. You know, start praying with your best friend or maybe with your parents or you know, praying with groups of people to where you start getting more comfortable being honest and vulnerable, like what you do in the secret place and doing it more in the open place. So sorry that was kind of long, but I felt like it was important. That's a great question. Thank you. Wow. I won one back. One of them likes me again. I'll win more of you.
Nice. No, anybody else have anything to add? Or that was good.
I'll just add one little thing. Some of you are like me. You have like the gift of long-windedness, right? And so you ever hang out with someone who's kind of quiet and you just find the need to fill all the empty space? And so don't, you know, I guess my encouragement there is don't feel the need to fill all the empty space with your own voice when you're doing that. I mean, just find the one simple thing that really connects with people. I love how Caleb coached us a couple days ago on just just finding the thing that really connects with people and not feeling like you need to overextend it or go beyond it, but just that one simple thing people can grab onto with you. But I thought what Caleb shared was amazing. So that too. That first, yeah. Then maybe what I said.
Yeah. Yeah. This one, this is kind of two questions in one, and they're a little different. I don't know if you could address both of them. The first one is, how do you deal with authority conflict in a band? This is specifically a youth band, but a band in general. When multiple people want to lead the band, and also how should band members address attitude conflicts when people on a team don't get along or struggle with working together? So authority conflicts and then an attitude conflict.
Sweet. Well, I think the most important thing is, you know, there's clear lines of authority, because without authority, you can't have unity. And we have this idea of unity as everybody's on the same tier of authority. And if we're all unified, then we're all kind of equals. And that's not a biblical understanding of unity. Wherever there's biblical unity, there's authority, there's headship. You look at the church, the way that church is in unity, Christ is the head. And then you have shepherds, leaders, and different people that have areas of influence. And so if you don't have authority, then you don't have unity, period. If you think you have unity because there's no authority, then you don't really have authority. And then conflict is the thing that makes that arise to the surface. And so giving people clear roles and people knowing their place, if you will, it's not a way to assert yourself, because biblical form of leadership is, you know, the leader is the servant of all. And so the leader is the one that has to carry the most responsibility for things. But make sure your lines of authority are really clear. And then absolutely, attitude issues and things like that, to me, they have to be confronted immediately, because they're poison to the team. And so how that always depends on the person. I mean, we could take a whole class talking about how to do confrontation, how to be able to confront, you know, difficult issues and things. But I think I'll just leave you with this one quick point on that. I think it's always helpful if you as a leader can really evaluate the situation and say, you know, what part of this is actually my fault as the leader. And I think this is just great in life, but the more responsibility you can own, the more power and authority you have to change it. If you don't own any part of a conflict, then you have no power to fix it. If you're just like, I'm this way because Brad is 100% a jerk and I can't do anything about it and I'm just stuck. And so whenever Brad's a jerk, I have to react this way. You know what I've done? I've given myself no room to grow and change. And so as a leader, if I go, you know, and I'm going to my confrontation, say, hey, I've noticed these things, and these are troubling, and I want to actually say I haven't done the best job communicating the vision for the team, and I feel like, you know, let's pretend you're the keyboard player. I think some of what your frustration has been is I haven't really given you a clear lane to run in, and I'm sorry about that. I want to own that as a leader, and I want to talk to you about how I can do better and fix that. But I do need to talk to you about this. The way that you're responding to this is not right. And this is why it's not right. And this is why it has to change. And so you are owning and apologizing and repenting. And it's not flatter. You're not just making something up just to make him feel better. You're genuinely figuring out, okay, is any part of this my fault as a leader? And you own some of that and then give them an opportunity to own that. I do that in almost all of my conflicts. And we have a big, big worship team. We have about 50-ish people that are on the weekend rotation at our church, and so I have a confrontation meeting once a week. I mean, I'm just at least one a week. I mean, it just every week I have to confront or address something, and it's part of it too. And so, but if I'm doing it in love and I'm owning as much as I can, and I try to have them leave feeling more encouraged than anything. Like I go into the meeting with some encouragements, some positive things. I pray about who they are, and I'm trying to call out identity and things like that. So that's kind of my short answer, even though it's kind of long. This guy, man. Give me a hug.
That's right. That was so fresh. Yeah, I think in that kind of thing, humility is always like the number one thing for everybody in the situation, just really being humble and kind of like what Dennis was saying this morning, considering others above yourself when dealing with kind of that kind of thing, where there's, especially in a youth band, because it's like peer-to-peer kind of thing, you know? It's always helpful when there's an adult leading the youth band, because it's like, okay, I know who the person is. But if it's all a bunch of kids, it could be challenging, so.
Students.
Yeah. I consider myself a kid, too. I'm 30, and I'm still a kid, so yeah. I don't, that's not derogatory to me, yeah, so.
And if, yeah.
I was just going to say, too, when you have that one person who, you know, you can look to, they're the leader, they're the authority, then it does leave room for others to know that and then step out and lead in their own way. Does that make sense? So, like, even for us this week, all of us being worship leaders and having, okay, let's pick, you know, you're going to be the worship leader that, you know, like, worship leader one. And then we've got worship leader two, worship leader three, whatever. And so that we all are confident in our roles. And so, but when you give that one person, yes, they're in charge, they're the leader, they're making the calls, then you can bring in worship leader two, you know, in your youth group to lead a song, you know, one song out of the four or the five that you do. And then it gives them confidence and they know their role. They're not having to do everything, but you're kind of raising them up. So.
Here is a more practical one. Where'd it go? When leading worship, should you start off with an upbeat song or a slow song?
Yes. Yes, that's the answer. I'm going to tell you a short story, and then you will know the answer after the story. I was in Bible school. There was a worship team. They prepared their songs. They had their set for it, right? First song, Happy Day. It was a couple of years ago. Oh, Happy Day, right? So they had that song. They've decided that's the first song. Everybody's ready. And then the dean of students comes in like 3 minutes before worship starts and says, okay, guys, just before we start worship, there's a video we want to show. And they show the video. And it just happened to be September 11 memorial thing. So they showed this video. And after the video, they say, all right, let's go into worship. And they did not change their song. But at the same time, they're singing the song. But they feel the weight of the video they just watched. So it was slower. Oh, Happy Day. And everybody's just singing along, but it's like, oh. So now you know. Yep.
They went into the gospel version. Oh, happy day. Oh, happy day.
Jeff and I have another one of those just while we're having fun here. Jeff and I were on stage. Somebody comes up. They're like, hey, we're going to do a last-minute offering piece. We didn't have a song prepared. So Jeff turns around to the whole band. He's like, hey, let's just do like Light a Fire. You guys know that song, Light a Fire down in my soul that I can't contain. Set a fire. Sorry. Wait, yeah, set a fire. Song. Yeah. Thank you for correcting me. At my place, we sing it Light a Fire, whatever. I'm just kidding. Sassy. So, similar to this situation, the person comes out to do the offering and they're taking up this offering for all these churches in Nigeria or something that had just been burned by, like, terrorists.
I remember.
And so Jeff turns around and he's like, not set a fire! Set a fire!
Because Brad's playing the drums and I'm doing my sway and I just go... I just remember that. It was so bad. Oh, it was so intense.
Pull out the rain songs.
The rain songs. Yeah. Anything about water right
yes,
now.
Yes, God. Let it rain. Oh, we're going to dance in the river.
If I could answer the question, seriously, I love what Jonas was getting out there, too, about just really knowing the moment, knowing the mood, knowing where people are at. But that really the reality is in our worship set, and this question kind of came up yesterday in our worship leadership workshop, just about like the journey that your set list takes people on. I mean, when people first come in, they're in one place, and hopefully through your leadership and the team and the shared experience of worship, they get to a much better place of just receiving from the Lord and getting those upgrades in the presence of God. I think Honas's point is perfect. Yes, the answer is yes. The answer is just go for it. I mean, whatever you feel like the Lord is speaking to you and working with your leadership, sometimes you'll start, maybe more often than not, start with something high energy to just engage people and start that journey with people. And other times you'll try it a different way and see how it works, you know, kind of thing. But I think the key is to just not be in fear about making a mistake with it, to just really be able to trust your heart, trust your guts. And obviously, like I said, communicate with your leaders and go for whatever you guys like.
Yeah. Knowing what context you're in, you know, like if it's a prayer night, it's probably easier to, you could start off a little bit more slow, a little more, you know, but if it's like a Sunday morning, people are coming in probably just, you know, with their kids. Yeah. And then you want to kind of get them like a little bit focused on the Lord. So it's starting off with like a praise, and most praise centered songs are faster, you know, a little bit more up-tempo. So I think that's like a good comment. It's not a rule, obviously, like we said, but most Sunday mornings you lead with like a praise song first, because you want to focus them towards the Lord. Then you go into that like deeper part. So, there's something about that Happy Day song. That's just, do you guys remember that story last year?
That's a great story.
That story about when I started off the worship service and I was like, I don't even care, I don't even want to be here. Do you remember that story from last year?
Yep. Yeah.
I went into Happy Day right after that. So there must be something about that song. I don't want to be here. It's a great lead line, though.
We had, I'll just tag on one more story because they're fun in a similar setting. But there was a lady in our church. She was awesome, old intercessor lady, loved Jesus. And she passed away late in the night on Saturday night. And we found out about it Sunday morning. And so I was leading worship, and I was like, I'm changing the set list. Like, we're not doing praise up at the top. Like, we're going to, because everybody knew this lady, and she was awesome, smaller church. And her, I'll never forget, her son comes in, and he's, like, bawling his eyes out. And he's like, we're not changing the set list today. This is before worship. She's like, because she's in heaven and praising, and that's what she would want. She'd want that. She's like bawling, and he's bawling. So I was like, okay, we're doing it. And so we do an upbeat song at the top, and I knew this lady too. And I'm an emotional wreck. I'm like crying, and the whole congregation is like crying, and we're singing this happy, upbeat worship song, but we're like, but her son's just like, we're gonna praise. And it was so, so funny. It's such an amazing memory. So, yeah, anyway. Good times.
This one came up a lot, actually, in a lot of your questions. How do you inspire unity both musically and spiritually within a worship team? Also, I'm going to add to that, too, because it's the same kind of question with another question here. Any suggestions for pre-service prep for your team? That's a good one, too. I like that. So, like, stirring up unity within your team, and then pre-service prep, you know, the whole unity factor. No? We can make that a second question.
We need to unify those questions, I think, a little bit more.
Well, I just looked up at the first one, and it said the word unify, and then that was at the bottom, so I was like, oh, these go together.
I'll give a really quick answer on the unity. The thing that brings unity is vision. Everyone rallying behind a common vision. And so for a leader, you know, your goals, keep the main thing the main thing. I mean, that's, you know, you've probably heard that. The main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. I mean, we say the main principles of what we're out, we say it over and over and over again in a little bit of a different way, but we continue to declare the vision. We got to add new stuff to keep people excited. The Lord will breathe on certain things, but we always use those different angles to rally everyone behind the common vision. So undoubtedly the number one thing for unity is clear vision and consistency of being able to give that vision.
I think that's such a great point. And it also has to do with before people even get on the team. You know what I mean? Like, if you're clear with your vision and clear with your core values or, you know, whatever, if you guys don't feel like you understand why everybody's coming together to do this, that's a matter for prayer and for meeting with your leaders and figuring that out. But having that thing that you rally around really starts at the recruitment phase of do we have the right people in the room, first off, before we're trying to unify them. And I get that there's totally merit to having diversity on our teams and stuff like that. I'm not talking about everybody being the same, but I'm talking about everybody being there for the same reason with a similar heart, at least to start, can really help. So having that clarity on vision really just sweeps through the whole piece of it, not just what you do on Sunday or not just what you do in one service, but how you recruit the kinds of people that are drawn to be on your team, because you're going after something that's polarizing, that people are either for it or maybe not, and they figure it out by being around you. This isn't my thing, you know, or this is what I've been looking for, and I'm with you. And so you kind of get to clarify with that vision right from step one, even before step one with people.
Now, the vision for the worship team, for your worship team, is going to be different from some of the churches. And for that, you have to be aware of what's the vision of your church, what your church is called to, and then if there is a vision or in your worship ministry. In the case of my church, Word of Life, the vision of the church goes into what the vision of the worship team is. And that vision flows into instructions for the worship leaders on how to lead our congregation. We have right now 5 or 6 worship leaders. And the church's Word of Life, our slogan is like a short version of the vision of the church, which is loving God, loving people, loving the nations. So one of the big things for how does that affect our worship team, all right, we love God. In our worship songs, whatever we are expressing or worshiping, we are focusing on God. We love people. How can you love people through the worship team? Well, through the songs you pick. If you have a multi-generational church, you don't pick all the new songs. You don't pick all the hymns. The whole set list is just old hymns. You somehow serve your congregation with all of them, because that's the vision. This is particular for my church, loving people. So something that our worship leaders know is that worship is a little bit like a picnic, and when you have the whole family together, you have roast beef for the older people, and then you have hot dogs for the kids, and you have different things. Like, so you're trying to serve your congregation in that way, all the generations. So if our worship leaders know that, all that vision from the church, vision for the worship ministry, and how you pick songs and how you lead. If someone comes and doesn't know that, they will come and say, you know what, let's sing all these new songs that I've been listening to, and you're the only one who knows that, and there's no unity, because even though it could be that you're the one producing all the songs and everybody knows them with you because you created them, that's all good, so your church knows them. But if not, nobody will follow you, so you're not serving your congregation. So it was a long-winded answer for saying your worship team will find unity in the vision and how you serve your congregation. And if someone comes in and, you know what, I only like old hymns, and that's all I'm going to sing, the whole team will be like, all right. And maybe they will submit playing, but their heart won't be submitted, right? So communication, vision, and preferring one another and serving others.
Yep. Speaking of unity, our church slogans are almost the exact same.
Let's hear it. Great. What is it?
Well, it's right there. It's pretty easy.
Oh, love dang God. It. I was gonna test you in front of Zach, but it's literally right there on the wall.
Well,
so.
I'm well aware. Well, every Sunday I'm staring at that. Let's see here. Well, actually, I do want to address the pre-service prep thing. The notes doesn't really go. But as far as, like, creating unity with the team, something that we've done here, what's one of the things, because we actually don't have practice, because we're a little bit of a smaller church, and, you know, they volunteer a lot. So I try to cut, like, another night out of their schedule, and we do Sunday mornings. But I get them here really early on Sunday mornings. so that we could be done by like 9 a.m. to have like a time of community. And I think that that's a big thing to kind of unify a worship team is living life together. And really, if they kind of they catch the vision when they see you living out the vision as the leader. And so I make coffee for them every single Sunday. And I encourage them to kind of grow as leaders themselves. Every week I'll have a different member bring just a devotional from their week where they share for about 5 minutes. And we pray, and so it's not just me sharing, but it's like, you know, last week Danielle shared a word, and you know, and so that kind of helps stir up unity, and it's kind of like a pre-service, like, prep, because we're not, and it's not like a spiritual thing, but it is a spiritual thing in a sense, where you're creating that unity amongst the team, where you're living life, and you're more comfortable with each other, you know, obviously prayer time and stuff, that we do that as well. We take, you know, 10 minutes, 15 minutes each time before service to pray and prep our hearts as well, so, yeah, okay. How do you deal with distractions? I think this is specifically talking about maybe more charismatic distractions from time to time. You know, like somebody doing
What's
something.
That over there?
Yeah, exactly. I was like, what? It's happening now? Impeccable timing. How do you deal with distractions? Most of the time, I just laugh.
Yeah, I'll give one quick point. Zach, I actually made a comment to whoever it was, but Zach did it really well on the opening night where there was, I can't remember, something crazy happened, whatever, and he acknowledged it and he tied it into whatever was happening. He got a laugh and then he moved on. What typically, if there's a distraction in the room, there's a crying baby, there's somebody yelling or screaming, or just something that has drawn everyone's attention, the best thing to do as a speaker, worship leader, whatever, is to be able to acknowledge it so everybody knows that it's been acknowledged and then they can move on. Or else they'll just keep looking at it or whatever. So what Zach did is Zach did it really well. He's, you know, a little more comfortable with it. He tied it into whatever was happening, made a joke. Everyone laughed, and then everyone forgot about the distraction.
Yeah.
And so that's just a real simple trick. Like, you try to, if it's a really intense distraction in the room, like, you can address it or just say something about it, whatever. And people, when it's acknowledged, they'll just move on.
There's this, like, yeah, that's exactly it. I remember one time Zach was preaching, and somebody in the front row was kind of uncontrollably laughing and kind of flailing on the ground during his sermon. And it was so incredibly distracting. And Zach was like, hey, somebody take him to the back. He's just kind
of like,
the
Jeff, knock way. That off, man. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, good one. No, I'm just kidding.
One time, this friend of mine was laughing and so flailing in the front.
There was once this little boy.
This coming from someone who wears glasses. Just kidding. Anyway, somebody got it. Great. Okay. But he said that, but everybody was so distracted. And then he said that, somebody moved in the back, and it was like done. Like, so he acknowledged it and he moved on. One thing I would suggest not doing is making it like you're obviously irritated about it. Because, okay, so an example, there's this one time we were at this pretty big conference and
famous drop. I was at a big conference with some big people doing big things.
I won't say the name, but if I said it, you'd know it. That's what Jeff just said.
No. Anyway, that's not the point. The point
I won't say Billy's name, but he's a really famous Graham.
No, but the big thing will come into context if you just let me finish my sentence.
Sorry, we're done.
Just kidding. So we were at this conference, and in the pre-service kind of prep time, they're like, hey, if you could have somebody come up and play keys while so-and-so's talking, that'd be great, just to kind of fill the void. Brad's laughing because he knows this. But so they started playing keys, right? And the guy is talking, and he turns and he goes, honey, you can't do that while I'm talking. And then it was like everybody in the room, this is like 800 people, which I guess isn't a big conference, but 800 people in the room are all like, I cannot believe that it just happened. I started getting text messages from people like, can you just please apologize to her for me? Because that was so like terrible. And then I went to the back and she's crying. And so like it was just a really bad situation. And it was because like the person was like obviously irritated by it. And he made it known that it was obviously irritated. And that's not a way to deal with distractions. Maybe, like, be polite, you know, because that'll make everybody, like, I can't remember a thing from the rest of the sermon because I just remember that one moment, you know what I mean? So, anywho, that was a fun time. Okay, anybody else have anything for that? That was a good.
So the question was,
how do you deal with
your pre-service prep? Oh no! Yeah, we have moved on. Okay,
it keeps coming
Sorry.
Back.
Right,
distraction question.
The distractions question.
So my answer to that question is what these guys said.
Perd, thanks, Perd.
That's powerful. That is powerful.
You
the
heard.
Story, the answer
you
to
heard
this
with
question.
The answer to this question was already given.
I love that show so much. Okay. What did Joe do today? Reel it in. I like that. Okay. I did not look at the next question. Let's do this one. When you're not feeling into the worship as a singer, like having a rough day or something. Dude, I'm still thinking about the part. I'm sorry. When you're having a rough day, and you're not feeling it as a worship leader or as a singer, do you still pretend to be into it?
That's a great question. Okay, so for me, when I'm having a bad day or whatever and I have to come up and lead worship, I, as quickly as possible, start to have a dialogue with the Lord in my head. And I'm talking and I'm saying, okay, I had a bad day. And you know, as I'm leading, you know, like I'm speaking with the Lord and I'm saying, you know, here's what happened, here's why I'm upset, whatever. And I'm inviting him into my pain, inviting him into, you know, what's going on. And between the Lord and myself working that out. And obviously, like, you know, your problems don't disappear in an instant, but I can't think of a better way to, or even a better place to be than in worship when I'm struggling, when I'm in pain, when things have not gone right. The quickest way for me to get out of that rut or get out of that just dark place is to worship. And so to fully give myself to that, you know, and of course I don't, you know, I'm not feeling like it in the moment, but how many times have we encouraged our youth group or our congregation, okay, even when you don't feel like it, he's worthy. And we, you know, we need to do that ourselves. And so when, you know, I think when we're not leading, that's the answer, is to worship. And so you're not really faking it till you're making it. That is the way that we do that. We worship and we come out of that. So it's not fake. You know, when we don't feel it, we do it. And I wouldn't call that fake. It's worshiping without that, the good warm fuzzies, which we're called to do anyways. So.
Why so downcast on my soul? Put your hope in God. I want to just add on to that thought. That was great. You're welcome. I mean, the biblical word and the picture for anointing, I mean, it means pressing and crushing. When they would create anointing oil, they would have to press and crush, you know, the grapes, the olives, the different things that they would put in this oil. And so when you look at that, what that says, the fragrance that is the anointing, like, oh, wow, that's so anointed, or that song is anointed or whatever. I mean, it literally means the internal crushing or the circumstances of life that you've gone through, the way that you've said yes to Jesus and how you come out on the other side, that is the anointing. I mean, it's so powerful. Like, if you've ever heard Bob Sorge preach on crushing, I don't know if you know him. He was a pastor in the area, used to pastor Zion, lost his voice, was a worship leader pastor. But he talks about suffering and saying yes to Jesus in the midst of it. And he doesn't have, I mean, he had incredibly difficult time in his life. And there's such an anointing and a sweetness. I mean, you just weep when you hear him talk about Jesus, because he doesn't go into it and he's not just like, hey, nothing was ever wrong in life and I'm happy and everything's awesome. Like he was honest with his journey, but he wrestled with the Lord through it and has real things to offer. And so I'd say as a worship leader, like those seasons of life, I mean, you might be going through a really difficult time. And worship, I mean, is the answer. You worship through it, but there's an honesty where you're like, I'm going to still say yes to the Lord in this. And you, if you let that out of you, that authentic worship, there's a fragrance that cannot be duplicated. When you are true to yourself in the season of life you're in, and you might pick that song that in a difficult time, like, even though it's hard, I still trust you and praise you, the congregation will feel that. They'll feel that anointing and that yes you said to Jesus.
A worship leader back in Mexico, they were getting ready for this conference, and she was pregnant, and she was scheduled to lead worship in one of the nights, and she was still like 3 months till the baby would come, but she had a miscarriage like that week of the conference, and everybody in the like. We knew about this. It was communicated to us because we knew her, like, very dear to us in this fellowship. And so she had every right to say, you know what, I don't feel like leading worship. And everybody was actually telling her, hey, you don't have to do it. And she actually said, I'm not going to do it. And throughout that week, the Lord was speaking to her, and she shared this with us. The Lord speaking to me that I need to do it so that I can worship him even when I don't feel like it. But it was like, that's the Lord pushing like really hard in a really tough situation. And she just went for it. And it's one of the most powerful worship times that I've ever experienced during this conference that night. Because we knew of the situation and we knew that was what was being offered that night was a sacrifice. It was a sacrifice of worship. And why would you deny the Lord of your sacrifice? I'm not sacrifice. Normally, we put it in the same terms as working really hard, right? Oh, it's a sacrifice. I'm working for it. No, a sacrifice is when something's painful and you still do it and you go for it. So that's it. It's difficult to tell you, and I don't know the particular answer for everyone to say, yeah, go for it, or you know what, just sit down for this one, and that's fine. You will know the situation, and the Lord will speak to you. But don't disregard those opportunities to worship the Lord with everything you've got, and even when things are not going well.
Yeah. Wow, that was great. Just kidding. Sorry. I was just trying to... Okay. Speaking of Bob Sorge, here's a quick one. We've mentioned Bob Sorge like 800 times this week. That guy's Yoda. What are some books that have helped you most as a worship leader? Just really quick. Maybe one from everybody or something.
Yeah, Follow the River, Bob Sorge.
Secrets of the Secret Place, Bob Sorge.
Exploring Worship, Bob Sorge.
What can I do? Envy, Bob Sorge.
Dealing with the praise and rejection of man, Bob Sorge. That's a good one.
Made a covenant with my eyes, Bob Sorge.
It's not business, it's personal, Bob Sorge.
Oh man, is he stumped?
All right, we don't have time for this.
Four, three.
Anything else?
No, I failed. I lost the Bob Sorge duel.
Jeff wins. Yay.
Oh. Just Bob Sorge. Just buy the whole. But seriously, dealing with the praise and rejection of man, and Following the River by Bob Sorge. And then Rachel said Exploring Worship by Bob Sorge.
Secrets of the Secret Place is a really great devotional one too. Like, I read it pretty much every day. It's like 2 pages each chapter. So like every morning or every night. You have any?
The Heart of Worship, Matt Redman. Like, it's a little tiny book like this. Mm-hmm. It's really easy to read, and I remember reading that as a teenager, and it was very impactful.
I'm looking at the name of the book I'm thinking of. I think this is the one, but The Pursuit of God by A.W. Tozer. Mm, is that the one that Carrie read from on Thursday or Friday, too? I don't remember where Zach is, but yeah, The Pursuit of God by A.W. Tozer for me is like, yep. Really, really good. Really small book, but really deep. I don't know if you guys like small books like me.
I love small
little
books.
Little books, yeah.
I get so intimidated by books that are thick. Oh, boy. No, thank you.
The Bible's in there, too, on my list somewhere.
So intimidating, kind of, actually. Yeah, one book at a time. I just get my Bible and each book, like all the books and different books, so it looks less Anyway. I chop up my Bible so that, like Genesis, then I bring it with me. Exodus. Just kidding. All right. I like this question. What are some examples of a congregation being revolutionized by worship in your own experience, and what were some key aspects of these transformations?
I know at our place, we have dealt with that New England thing of just like, we've talked about it a little bit, just kind of the stone faces looking back at you, just daring you to ask them to do something in worship so they can just totally blow you off and not do it at all. You know, come on, put your hands together. Nope. Hard pass. You know, like, what are you going to give me first? You know, it's just like, whatever. And I mentioned this a little bit in our worship leadership workshop yesterday, but I've just decided with our people to continue to encourage our worship leaders. I have, you know, lots of volunteers with me that lead songs or lead, you know, the whole set or significant portions. I've just continued with them to say, keep speaking to their expectation in their hearts, their hunger in their hearts, you know, rather than seeing what's going on the outside and just deciding for people that that's all that's happening. I've just told our worship leaders to choose to speak to the hunger that we know is in people and just to believe for it. And that has really changed on both sides of it. It's changed our onlook. You know, it's kind of like we gave up authority a little bit there for a while, where it was like, well, depending on how the people react, we'll, you know, do it or not do it or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And we decided to take some authority back to go, no, we're going to speak to the hunger that's in people, because we know it's really there, and we know that just some people have no idea what to do. You know, there's some people in your churches, in our churches, that are watching the worship experience and watching those, like, pockets of people that really are free and really excited to you know, express themselves in worship. And even though on the outside they're looking, like, just ticked off, what they really feel is like, man, I wish I could be that free. You know, like, if we could have brought them all here last night to see you guys worshiping last night, that's what they would have expressed. They would have been like, I wish I could do that. I wish I could let myself. I wish I could give myself permission. And we've just decided as leaders to change our mindset. What is happening? Distraction. There's a distraction happening. Let's move on. We've just decided to speak to that in people because we know it's there. We know that people are showing up in our buildings because they're really hungry for God and they really want something real. And that has revolutionized our leadership, which has in turn really engaged our culture on Sunday in a totally different way. And I've just been speaking over our church. You are a people of worship. Like, that is 85% faith on some Sundays, you know, just like, you don't look like a people of worship, but I'm believing for you that you are a people of worship. That is our culture. That is who we are. And just declaring that over them. And I can see that changing in our church. So I think that answers the question.
So any other cool stories? Any IHOP stories from the awakening days?
I want to share with my youth group, just to kind of scale it down. I remember being in sixth grade, and I got to start going to youth group. And the worship team for youth group were all seniors, and they were all excellent musicians, all friends. And there was something lost in translation as these sixth, seventh, eighth, ninth graders. And so what ended up kind of changing this culture of worship in my youth group was the leadership recognized that they were losing people, and it was just kind of this one little click worship band thing. And so what they started doing was inviting different musicians and singers that they knew, different age groups, different just different groups of people. You know how you kind of like gravitate towards, you know, your buddies, your friends, whatever. And it was unbelievable what happened over the course of like a year, 2 years. We're seeing everyone engaging in worship because their buddies up there, you know, he's not the best bass player, but I remember me as a sixth grader, I played piano a little bit and sang a little bit. They didn't need that, but what they needed was a bass player, which I did not play. And what I ended up doing for a year was playing bass on the keyboard. Bom, bom, bom. I was bad. It was really bad. But they brought me in, and it was just crazy. This young little girl and others, they did that too as well. And then all of a sudden, we just had more corporate engagement. I think even on a grand scale, having different ages leading and being a part of the team. And I don't know, it does something in you. Like when you feel more apart, when you're able to relate to who's up there. So.
Sweet. I mean, we could talk about this forever. I'm sure we all have a ton of stories about that kind of stuff, but those were great. We have a couple more minutes. There was a question from the worship leadership class that we said that we were going to answer. Did we answer that or no? Oh, well, hold on. Let me give you the mic so that we can have this on record.
So my church doesn't really, like I said, it's an older church, so they do older hymns, and then they'll ask me to lead worship, and I'm, like, doing newer songs, and I'm asking, like, how can you teach people new songs and start it off, like, in a good way?
Yep. I mean, depending on the context of when you say older songs, you mean all hymns? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think a powerful way is to introduce sounds. Hey, hat. That's a hat. It says hat on it. I think adding newer sounds or contemporary arrangements with hymns, or even some like the Amazing Grace, My Chains Are Gone, that introduces a modern chorus with a hymn is a really great way to do that. Also, redoing old songs in a real modern and fresh way. And there's a lot of amazing worship songs in the 80s and pulling back some. The battle belongs to the Lord. Glory. No.
In the 80s, I was in Mexico.
Yeah, sorry. So, really, it's if you're able to do different things like that to feed into it, it really helps. And introducing some more sounds and modern arrangements into that, and then beyond that, I think really, you know, not introducing more than one new song a week, and getting a chance to really share your heart in it too. I mean, if they feel like, if you go in with, like, this edge of, like, you know, you stupid people, like, I know all the good songs, and you better sing my songs or you all suck, like, everyone will feel that. But if you go in, which is totally not what you're saying, you go in with a heart to really serve and learn and grow, they'll feel that, and they'll want to go with you. And so, not pushing it, doing it slowly and embracing what you can. I mean, old people, like, They do. They love it when you bring back some old songs. I led worship at our second campus that merged with another church, and they had a lot of old people in that campus. And I led there one of the first couple weeks, and I know that, you know, they've only done modern songs for a while. And I did two hymn choruses as part of the worship set, and it was kind of a very modern feel. It was very eclectic, wall of sound, whatever. But man, I mean, I had so many older people grab me after and say, that worship was so great, thank you. And then our children's pastor who stayed on from the old congregation, they're like, I think you're the most famous person as part of this transition because all the old people were talking about you. And I did it in a way that if you were young, you'd be able to appreciate. But they felt honored in how I brought that in there. And so really having that heart of honor and then introducing real slowly and then trying to do what you can, like I said, to take, you know, if they sing, what's that? I love that Twyla Paris song, that He is the Lord, forever His truth will reign. God, that song is so anointed. It's so good. Pull out some of those ones if you can and do them but push the people. Do a more modern feel with them and take them with you on the journey. So great question.
Yeah, I really wanted to pull this question into today so that everybody could hear it, because really, I just know it touches like every context and every area, that fight for like song preference. You guys obviously being mostly younger generation, being on one end of the spectrum, and then, you know, everybody's got their preference, their sweet spot, that CD or tape cassette that they put on at home that's like, every time this song comes on, it means so much to me, you know. But, I, you know, I love what was expressed so far, you know, about really you're there to serve people. You know, I do want to, like, make the point, though, also, in addition, not in competition at all with that, but in addition to that, that some people just want what they want no matter what. And so you do have to kind of, like, stir yourself up. I mean, I know at our place there's this big, like, argument sometimes over the sound volume or something like that. When our entire leadership at our church has really kind of gone after, we want to reach, like, a certain demographic specifically and engage them in our worship service. And as much as we can, make it inclusive for everybody else. But within that, we try to find ways to really speak unity into it, not argument, I guess, is what I like to see happen there, is like, rather than turning it into an argument or trying to convince them to see it your way, to really invite them into unity and like being together. And one other thing I wanted to say about this whole song thing is that when there's anointing and when it's just really clearly like the song represents the heart of your church or a powerful moment that's shared and things like that, all the preference stuff just kind of like melts away for most people. You might still have those couple grumpy people on either side of it that just go, whatever, I don't like that song. But when the presence of God is there, obviously, you know, that's the focus. And when you find songs that people really grab onto at their hearts, and it doesn't matter what age or what musical style you like, it's just like there's something about that song. It's just so powerful. And so I think those are the extra pieces. I think there's a good way to communicate, you know, it goes both ways, you know, and to just say, you know, as much as you want what you want what we want, and so how can we come together and do this together? And it's a really hard topic. That's why I wanted to bring it in today, because I know it's something we're all facing in some degree or another, or will face in the future. But I just think, like with conflict, I mean, this is another kind of conflict you can have in your church. Communication and humility are just so key. And the more you entrench yourself in not even talking to that person and just finding, you know, like there's a political way to do it, a sleazy political way where you just kind of behind the scenes, like talk to your people and get your alliance going. And okay, now we've got a squad, we've got a powerful force to push our agenda. You don't want to do that. You don't ever want to do that, because the Lord will never honor that. What you want to do is communicate really clearly something that's on your heart. And, I mean, hopefully if you, the places that have really healthy and good leadership will hear someone that they care about, a young leader in their church, expressing something in a positive and honoring way and go, yeah, we should do something about this. We've got to find somewhere to meet in the middle here. And so communication and humility are just so key for me in that.
I have a question for you guys. Who here knows the song Ancient of Days? Okay, now keep your hands up. Who here likes the song Ancient of Days? Okay, so still more people. My fiance, she always wants me to bring that song back in a church service, and I'm always like, that song is...
Its song is amazing. There's so much amazing theology in that song.
Yeah, but the drum beat.
It has to be Ron Canole's version.
It's like
It has to be Ron Canole's version. Which that is a Can't principle that can apply to all of life.
Interesting. Does this...
Go. Something. All right. Does that mean you're
doing it? We'll see. I'll pray about it.
What were we just talking about? How we wanted to pick songs to like serve the pastoral leadership and vision of the church and... As the senior pastor, Zach, of New Hope Fellowship, how do you feel about the song Ancient?
He told me, he told me before I took the job that he would never force me to do something against my will. He's a great guy. This pastor. Let's give him a round of applause for Zach. Yeah. That guy's a man. Love him.
Awesome. In the heart of honoring your leadership, your pastor, you serve your congregation, everything. I believe 3 years ago we did something at our church. It was no 2 years ago. It was a throwback Sunday, and we prepared a whole set list, and we did like Ancient of Days was one of those. We did what's that? Celebrate Jesus, celebrate. And then we wanna sing. So that one was there too. So that we communicated to the congregation. People came on Sunday with turtlenecks and stuff, and they,
that's amazing.
It was like a throwback Sunday. The whole congregation was into it. So we and the funny thing is that they came prepared to, oh, they're gonna do this for the younger people, this funny songs that we don't do anymore. But they got into it, and that's they just amazing. Worshiped with them. So it has to do in the way you present it. If you come in and your pastor tells you, you know what, I need this song because the sermon ties into it, I don't really like it, and then you go with the stinky face singing the song, you will communicate that spirit to the congregation, and that's the way your congregation will receive it as well.
Yeah. That's awesome. That's a great story, too, and a great idea.
Great. Well, let's give these guys a round of applause, yeah.